This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 185 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
Let me be honest, John, because I don't lie.
Yeah, you do.
No, I know. I hate the saying, I'm going to be honest, or if I'm going to be honest, or to be honest, because realistically, why wouldn't you be?
I mean, right.
Right.
It's like you're prefacing it, I'm a liar, but right now I'm about to insult you.
But I'm being truthful right now.
It's just like people who say, okay, no offense intended, but I'm about to offend you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or no disrespect. Right. Oh, you're about to disrespect me.
Exactly. Oh, this is going to be full of disrespect.
See,
okay.
How this works.
Here we go.
So I didn't watch any of the CW shows, and it's because I didn't get a message from you telling me one was worth watching. I was actually waiting for it. I was waiting for you to say, Flash was excellent this week.
And you know, I was sitting on my end watching them going, is this motherfucker putting the entire CW lineup on my fucking shoulders so that every week I'm now responsible for not only watching them, but then reporting either through text of, Mike, I'm your secretary and I'm here to tell you that you should watch this, or to show up to the podcast and be like, okay, you go look stuff up on eBay while I tell the world about the CW shows.
I don't look anything up on eBay. I don't have money to spend.
Dude, the other night your phone was going off because you were bidding on stuff on eBay.
Okay, that was a card I wanted.
Oh. But you just said, I don't look stuff up on eBay.
I had that one thing, but I mean, I don't sit here and look at eBay while you're talking. I usually read the show you're talking about on Wikipedia.
So you would rather read something than have me tell you a story. No, I'm telling you about the show, and you're like, fuck this, I'm going to read it.
No, I'm following along, that's all.
Is there a bouncing ball that looks like my head?
There will be tonight.
I hope you've got a big shovel, dude, because you're digging that hole deeper.
Ah, fuck. Anyways, so I take it none of them are worth watching.
I had a lot of notes on all of them.
Excellent.
And now you're getting ready to type in the show title so that you can look up and follow along. This is what I put up with, people. This is it. So which one are we starting with?
Oh, is it
which one are you looking up for?
Supergirl first?
I don't know. I always put Batwoman first because I think that comes first. I think that's on at 8 and Supergirl's on at 9. There you go. He has the Wikipedia page for Batwoman.
No, I just had a lot going on this week.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
What do you mean? How do you know I didn't?
Because Friday night we were supposed to go see The Evil Dead, the musical, and you went, oh, I'm so bummed that they didn't have power. I guess I'll go see some shitty wrestling up in Fairfield.
I did, too, and it was shitty.
Yeah. You were just like so dejected, like, oh, God, I don't even want to, but my wife's kicking me out of the house.
You know, that...
Yeah. So it was bad. It was bad, was it?
God, it was, yeah. Yeah.
You said it was going to be bad going in. You said if it was IWE.
If it was IWE.
Oh, yeah.
If it was Limitless or Let's Wrestle, it'd be good, but it's going to be IWE. I talked to him before. He goes, yeah, I promote bad wrestling. That's okay. People like it.
Oh, my God.
Here's the thing, right?
Oh, is he a state worker?
No. Used to be, probably. Here's the thing. It's $10. I know maybe I'm going to get one good match. It's kind of how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone's going to get horrifically injured.
Because they don't know what they're doing.
Or
no,
some,
not because it was planned that way.
Right. Or some veteran is going to get pissed off at a new guy and just start beating the shit out of him for real, which is exactly what happened.
Closed fist.
Because he was pissed off because he fucked up a spot. So he just started kicking him in the head. And then it's just, all right, that's worth $10. But anywho.
All right. So this week on Batwoman, we had Magpie. She's a she's the CW's version of Catwoman. Oh, wait.
Oh, well,
that is a DC character.
Yeah.
Oh, but no, this was Magpie because maybe, you know, Catwoman is strictly for Batman.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. So she wears like a bleach blonde wig or a white wig, and she has these big long claw fingernails, and she steals stuff. and who is it? Catherine. That's Kate's stepmom. And basically, the B story in this whole episode was that Catherine was having her guys dig up Beth's grave because she finally came clean at the end because Beth, like, knew what was going on. I'm sorry, Alice, who's not really Beth.
Right.
But she basically knows that what happened was Catherine took it upon herself years back to say, you know, Kate and her dad, they just aren't getting on with their life, so I'm going to fake a report and say that they found bone fragments of Beth's skull so that they'll finally just bury the body and call it good. So she faked the whole thing. And Alice knew about that because, you know, she's alive.
She's Beth.
And so she basically she told Catherine, she's like, you either tell him or I'm going to. And then Catherine sent her goons after her, and Alice is like, I've got better goons. And
well, hold on a second, though. What? So Catherine, after years of them pining over the loss of the daughter that's never found, mm-hmm. she fakes them finding bones.
No. She did this like after it had been like a year and a half of them searching for the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, yes, years. It's not current days, but it's
right.
A year and a half, 2 years.
Okay, but a year and a half after, and they're still pining over the loss. And then
they're still looking for her. Because nobody's ever found any body parts.
So they just want to move on.
Wants them to move on.
I don't think what she did was all that bad.
No.
I mean, if she had done it, like, that day.
Right.
But, like, a year and a half later?
Yeah, basically was like, and she said that to the dad. She's like, your daughter wasn't moving on with her life. She was getting in fights at school. You were lost. You weren't even paying attention to her. I had to do something to snap the two of you out of it.
Yeah.
So I did this. And he's like, get out of my house.
Oh,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like this turned Alice into Beth into Alice. No,
it was just a B story.
Did we find out where she was this whole time?
Alice?
Yeah.
She's been off doing her own thing.
But like as a child, where was she?
I don't think that they've given us that yet.
Okay.
Kate is dating someone, and it's the female vampire from The Passage. Or The Passing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I know this girl. Why do I know her? She looks like Piper Perabo, but not really.
Yeah, the one that...
the blonde.
Yeah.
Killer. She killed her mother and her stepfather.
Yeah, and then the guy brought her to the bar.
Yep.
And she hid out there.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, Kate's dating her, but then quickly realizing that, you know, as a superhero, you can't really do that. And she asked, you know, Lucius's son there. She's like, how did Bruce do it? And he goes, he didn't. He hated life. In fact, at the end, he hated being Batman more than he hated being Bruce Wayne. But they had a mishap where she threw a batarang, and when she went to catch it, it went past her and broke a priceless museum artifact. And she told Lucius's grandson or son or whatever, she's like, hey, the batarang's broken. He's like, this thing's a piece of engineering genius. It's not broken. And, yeah, it turns out that it was calibrated to Bruce, who has longer arms. So, on the one hand, cheesy. On the other hand, scientifically accurate. So, I got to give him some credit for that. You know, she can't just use all of his tech, like a remote control batarang that's designed to come right back to you and expect that it's going to work perfectly.
Fair enough.
I will say this, too. They didn't say this in the episode, but I read it online. This was episode 4. They said that after this episode right here, she is officially now caught up to where she was in Crisis.
Oh.
Or in...
In the event last year.
Yes. So it took 4 episodes. Yes. No. Infinite Earths is just...
No, it doesn't matter. Yes.
Yeah, I know. Crossover last year. Remember how we kept saying,
yes.
Well, now she's officially caught up. So the episode that aired last night, because it's Monday 11/4.
Yeah.
The episode that aired last night is now in tandem with everything that's going on in the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Whether they even bring it up or not, I don't know, but.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
So, worth watching, though?
Eh.
See?
I'm still not convinced. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it's still pretty fucking cheesy.
Well, here's the thing. I don't have the luxury of being able to have it up on a screen while you're playing video games or doing something else.
Fair enough.
Having it in the background, which has come, you know, I have to actually, like, when my wife's awake, we have to watch joint shows. And then, like, when she's gone or whatever, then I can watch my shows. But I find I need to sleep now.
Yeah. It's like, amazing, isn't it?
I find that now that I'm used to getting 6 to 7 hours of sleep at night, I can't go back to 4.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't function.
Do you look back and go, how the fuck was I living?
Yeah. Yeah. I do frequently.
Yeah.
Go like, how the fuck did I pull that off? How did I pull that off?
Okay. So I got out of work after working an 18-hour shift. I slept for 2 hours, got up, took the kids to the movies, took the kids to daycare, got some ice cream, blah, blah, came home, slept for 2 more hours on the couch because I fell asleep while I was in the middle of something, woke up, ate some dinner. It was confusing. I didn't know where I was.
Yeah.
I pooped my pants and then went back to work.
Yeah. I mean, that's not an unrealistic timeline of a day for me. Like, that is, that's not inaccurate.
Holy God. I was so tired before I came over here tonight, and so I think that's why I'm just, like,
okay.
Wired. Supergirl, dumb.
Perfect.
John Jones's brother is named Malefic, which is literally a word for evil or rotten. I mean, the fuck? They try to trap him in the Phantom Zone, but he can phase through it, because for some reason he can. They've got weapons that can kill Martians.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Meanwhile, James takes his sister because his sister got caught in the middle and she's now tuned so she can see Malefic even when he's disguised as somebody else. Because, you know, Martians, they can change.
Right.
So James takes her back to their hometown to kind of hide her out. No, National City's where they live now. I can't remember where his hometown
is. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's true.
So it's some podunk little suburb. They find some kids squatting in their house because, you know, their parents are in jail because, like, mom stole a jacket and got life sentence because there's a corrupt prison and the police force and everybody is on the take because they know that otherwise they'll go to jail. So that's why James is now leaving the show.
I'll say James found a reason to not be, because I saw the actor was leaving the show.
Yep. So, yeah, that's going to be his reason. But, yeah, then she discovers that she can actually see Malefic. She can see through his eyes, so she goes back to help out. And they manage to trap him with Lena's help, but Lena wants him actually, like, he didn't get trapped in the Phantom Zone. He got trapped where Lena wanted him because she wants to work with him and get his Inception power.
So they're making Lena full-blown evil.
Oh, yeah, she is absolutely full-blown evil. Everything that she does, she has the nice, sweet face and helps them out just to suit her own needs so that she can destroy them later.
So The Flash is the only one I'm tempted to watch. Like,
dude, that is one thing you're missing out on. Nash Wells.
Oh, really?
Adventurer extraordinaire, hopper across multiple dimensions. Right now, he worked with them and told them that, you know, they could have this cure for, what's his name? Ramsey.
Okay.
You know, the one, Mohinder Suresh.
Yeah, Mohinder.
Yeah. So they got he said there's a cure for what ails Ramsey, that HLH, but in order to show you where it is and help you get it, you're going to have to make me this circuit that I need to complete my searching.
Oh, did Cisco then just pass it to him?
No. He made him work for it, and then he was like, well, I guess I'll make it. So he made it, and then Nash Wells is like, wow, this is garbage. Like, I've seen better things by monkeys on different Earths, and that's not an exaggeration. Like, this is literally the worst thing that you could have made. I guess it'll work, but wow, you are not good at this. I thought that was kind of good.
Yeah, it's
like,
funny.
Knock Cisco down a few pegs. Dude, he's the best Wells so far.
Like, really?
Yeah, because he's got an Indiana Jones kind of.
I'll go back and watch the last episode.
Yeah, he's got like an Indiana Jones kind of thing.
Okay.
But it is, and also the villain's getting interesting because he not only found out that he has to drain blood from people to make them to live, to stem his own disease.
Yeah.
But it has to be specifically flooded with adrenaline.
Oh.
So, yeah. So they have to be afraid before he kills them so that he can actually live. And then once he does kill them, he has control over them like a puppet master. So it's kind of cool. He's got like this army of zombie slaves that can't be stopped.
Sweet.
That he fed off of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we get Caitlin back or still all Killer Frost?
It's still Killer Frost. And then Arrow was interesting at the end. Most of the rest of it, he met back up with Speedy, and, you know, so then, oh, Willa Holland's back for a little bit. And yeah, they had this whole stupid League of Assassins thing where, you know, there's a magic sword that that whoever holds it commands all the assassins in the world. They'll bow down, you know, and so they went through the trap-filled place and blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, you keep getting those flash forwards of the future and his kid and JJ and all those kids.
Yeah.
They were just about to kill JJ, which is John Diggle Jr.
Yep.
Who is now leading the Deathstrokes.
Right.
Which is the gang.
Yep.
They literally were stabbing him. Like, the other son was stabbing him to death. They just watched one of their friends die. And then something happened and they all appeared in modern times. In the same room with Oliver and
Diggle. Okay, so 2019.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now I guess we won't have any flash forwards because now they're all together.
Ooh.
And it's probably the monitor that brought them in. But
well, did you see that? What's his coming back for the finale?
Yeah. I don't care. Felicity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently, the way this is running.
Yes.
Crisis on Infinite Earths is episode 8
of
Arrow.
Okay.
Then we have episode 9, which is called Green Arrow and the Canaries, which is the backdoor pilot to the spinoff.
Right, right.
And then there's one more episode called Fade Out.
Mm.
So I don't know what that is. I thought Oliver died in the crisis, personally.
Right.
Because it wouldn't really make sense to have him survive the crisis just to die 2 episodes later.
Right. Like, yeah.
Not unheroically, but like...
like he falls in front of a bus and gets run over.
Rick Grimes on Walking Dead. Talk about a shit ending. Like, that was...
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then to go, oh, and now that you're pissed, I'm ending the comic. Bye.
Yeah.
All right. So, now you go. What do you got? I just brought you up to speed on 4 shows.
I will also tell you I did not watch Prodigal Son. I think I'm done.
You're not missing much.
I think I'm done.
This time it was, oh, it was the kid. Of course it was. You know, the little 11 or 12-year-old out there tending the bunnies in the cage. And you're like, I bet you that kid's a psychopath. He was. Yeah, you're really not missing much. It's become a background show for me and one that I'm like, I don't even care. And it's weird because it was the first one to get picked up for a full season. But it just died out so quick. There's so much family drama, you know, like outside of the crime, there's so many scenes of like, you know, mom telling the daughter, you know, you shouldn't be talking to your father. He's a bad person. I don't know. You never let me meet him.
Yeah.
What else?
So The Good Place.
The Good Place, yes. Let's go to the
comics. This was surprising. So Michael visits Bad Janet, and apparently she's been captured since they discovered that it was her.
Right.
And not Good Janet. And then, because then the next episode they go rescue Good Janet.
Right.
And Michael's talking to her like, oh, this is what happened. This is flashback. But it's
telling her a story.
But it's been 6 months that she's been in captivity.
Yeah.
That seemed weird to me because it's like the show just jumped 6 months in the story arc.
And they kind of had to because they're heading towards an end.
Yeah.
And they had to show some kind of growth with these humans. And it couldn't be like an overnight thing, especially with dipshit there.
How many episodes?
There's 13 episodes every season.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay. So we're halfway through practically.
Yeah.
I mean, this is episode 7s this week.
Yep.
So he tells her basically, hey, this is what happened together. We the humans went on a ski trip. And, like, everyone seemed to be getting along well. And then Brent says, hey, I wrote a novel.
This novel was awesome.
Did you write down the names of the characters?
I didn't.
Neither did I. But, like, the Dahani character is, like, Pakistan Jane or something. Yeah. I mean, like, he just makes himself be so awesome in this book. And, his, you know, Tim and Tahani get it on and Chidi's a loser and all this other stuff. And, of course, people read the book and they're highly offended. And everything kind of blows up in their face. And then Chidi even actually punches Brent when Brent won't apologize. Brent does the age-old, I'm sorry you were offended by the book.
Yes, exactly. And they're like, not an apology.
Yeah, he doesn't actually apologize, you know, for anything. But it's weird because it's all telling about, you know, it's Michael telling Bad Janet
because,
and stuff.
Yeah, because then we get interjections of Bad Janet being like, you know, see, this is why people are useless. And it was a chip driver mystery. That was the book. Yeah. I'm looking up some of the stuff while you're...
And, but in the end, you know, even Eleanor's like, the thing for Michael is that they show, you know... Eleanor and the rest of the group was like, all right, how can we fix this? How can we make things better? Do we have to just restart and try again? I mean, like, they're actually putting, they want to put the effort into this. And so Michael doesn't marbleize Janet. Instead, he gives her a copy of him and Janet's manifesto on these humans as they've been writing to date, and go back to the bad place, you know, tell them what you've learned. And this is what I've learned. And maybe you've learned something too. So that was kind of different. So,
her name was Scarlet Pakistan.
Scarlet Pakistan.
And Chidi was Four-Eyed Igby.
Yeah.
I love how when he was describing it, and I can't even do it justice, but he was like, you know, it's half spy mystery, half nuclear codes, half golf primer. Like, he just kept – it kept being half of this and half of that and half of this.
Oh, and he solves the crime mystery on page 10.
And he was proud of that. He's like, what a great guy.
Yeah.
What a great detective.
I mean, like, he gets to the club and is like, that's okay. I've already solved the mystery. On page 10, after one interaction with someone?
Because he's that good.
That's how good he is. Oh, Superstore did another Halloween episode.
So my first note on Superstore was another Groan-worthy Amy episode.
Oh, God. I know. Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's get this out of the way. Dina in the cop outfit again.
Yeah. Which the first year was like, wow. The second year was like, oh, she's doing that again. Now it's like, dude, do you own any other costumes? Do you want to try anything else?
Nope. Nope. Apparently
everybody
not.
Else is different.
Amy as Judge Judy looked hilarious.
No.
No?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
That's who she was?
Yep.
Okay.
Because she had the RBG around her neck. And.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair enough. Still look good, though.
Yes.
And I like that Jonah was dressed as a cowboy. And he's just like, so, just a cowboy, huh? Yeah, that's all I went with this year, just a cowboy. I don't mean anything. There's no underlining story to it. Oh, really? So you're not really da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Yep, I like that. We're going to go with that instead.
Garrett's like, I'm just waiting for Jonah to hurry up and tell us all how we're wrong for, you know, taking the stereotypical cowboy meaning and blah. No, I'm not going to do that.
I'm just a cowboy. We get
so the new district manager shows up. Yeah, I saw that you spit that all over your keyboard.
Yeah, I know.
So the new district manager shows up, and she's actually a cool shit.
She's Hispanic, apparently, as well.
But, you know, she comes right across with Amy. Amy's like, oh, so how's the old district manager doing? You know, is she sick? And she's like, what, you mean her coat problem? Oh, we were all talking about it. Don't worry about it. And Amy's like, you're cool.
And then, but it's sad, really. It's sad.
Yeah. But she is a really cool shit.
Yep.
They're just about done getting ready to unionize. They had to have somebody come over from the Fenton store.
To bring the signed cards.
Yep. And it turns out that it's Kelly.
Who's dressed as a cowgirl.
Yes. But like, not even, she's like all pink.
Yes.
So like, it's a woo girl kind of cowgirl.
Right. And her and Jonah don't actually match, but they used to date, and Jonah's a cowboy, and Kelly's a cowgirl, and, oh, you guys wearing matching costumes, and da-da-da-da-da, and they make a deal out of it. And then the district manager's like, oh, Kelly, what are you doing here? Oh, well, and then Amy's like, they're dating!
Yeah, because...
And she comes over every day, and they have lunch together.
Yeah, because Amy was doing her stupid, awkward thing that I hate when this show does. I hate it when any show does it.
Yeah.
But yeah, she basically, like... Oh, I didn't know that Kelly was your contact at Fenton. I didn't know you two were still talking. It seems like something that you could have told me about, but, you know, that's great. Yeah. Why didn't you tell me? It was just...
Where Amy's all jealous and kind of possessive, but at no other time does she seem to care about their relationship.
Yeah.
Because they don't really talk about the relationship very often.
Ever.
Like, you know, other than the fact, like, they'll bicker back and forth, maybe, or talk about, you know, dinner or this, that, or whatever. But even
when he was trying to get her to take a nap because she was always tired.
Yeah. but otherwise, it's only it's convenient this episode for her to be Amy to be jealous, right. Which is absurd that Amy's even jealous because
she's the settler.
Yeah,
he's the reacher.
Exactly. Thank you.
So the district manager, they basically like they try to throw her off the fact that Kelly's there. I love that Kelly at one point, like when the district manager wasn't around, she's like, literally dozens of reasons I could have been here.
Yeah.
And then later on, even she's like, you know, oh my God, I hate coming to this store. Like, it's such a train wreck of a store at times. So basically, the problem arises when Kelly hides the union cards in one of the gift bags, and then Sandra accidentally hands them out to all the kids. So they run around the store accosting kids and taking their bags and trying to find the cards. And it turns out that they were in the bag that when they look at the security cameras, it turns out that they were in the bag that the district manager took. So Then they have to bring her back inside and say she won the costume contest while Dina breaks into her car to get the car. It was just painful. Yeah,
it was dumb. It was over the top dumb. And then at the end, during the credits, they're like, oh, look, there's empty candy wrappers in here. So do you think she saw the union cards? I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's up in the air there. And then, but the backstory in this, the B story. Okay, so the B story I'm going to talk about. The other one, okay. Was it Cheyenne and Mateo trying to find out who the serial killer is?
Because they keep leaving feet around.
Yeah, and they think it's Dina, and so they follow Dina.
There you go.
This is the best one.
Oh my God, it was so good.
What was it in like the lawn and garden section? Yep. They made a
haunted
house.
But it's a Cloud Nine haunted house, so right. You know it's just like fake spaghetti and stuff.
Right, and you saw them, like, we saw Harris put up the papier-mâché stuff. So Glenn left his phone in there, and he's afraid to go back in and get it.
Oh, my God. And he's doing so well. Just like, I don't know. Maybe I could go in there. I can't even do him justice.
Oh, no, you can't. You really can't. And Garrett is just like, yeah, dude, go back in there. It's fine. So then Garrett goes in to look for him, and he comes out, and he's got, like, clearly fake blood coming out of his eyes. Like, he's got blood tears. And he goes, oh, man, I was so scared. It's like, are you crying blood tears? Am I? Oh, I must be. Like, it was hilarious. And it scares Glenn away. And then he goes to go in again, and that kid comes out, you know, like,
looking like not a Wednesday, not a Pugsley Adams, but more like a Eddie from the Munsters.
Kinda, yeah. And a British accent, are you Glenn Sturges? We've been waiting for you, or you can't go in there.
They told you not to come back in there.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was hilarious. And the kid runs away, and Garrett's just like, that's great, kid, the accent. Yeah, I was just playing it. You know, I just felt right. Oh, that was fantastic. Like,
oh my God! And then finally, Glenn gets up the gumption. Like he walk over to the door, then step away, like walk over the step away, and make it like he was going to run. And so finally, he goes in, and Garrett just walks over and shuts the door and locks it, and then just sits out there. Well, it all started because Glenn said that he hated, this was his first Halloween with diabetes, and that, you know, he couldn't have any sugary stuff, and Garrett's just got like two bags of candy and he's popping them. He's like, so I guess I'll just sit here and watch you eat that candy. And he goes, yeah, do whatever you want. So Glenn took it and threw it away, and he's like, dude, that was my candy. He's like, if I can't have it, I can't have you eating it in front of me. So that was it.
Yeah, so that, Garrett was just
being a dick. You know,
he needs revenge. I do love the fact when Glenn's screaming and pounding on the door, and then he stops and calls Garrett.
And who sends it to voicemail.
And Garrett's phone's ringing outside the door, and then you hear Glenn go, hey, Garrett, it's Glenn. I seem to be locked in here, and I mean, I found my phone at least, you know, so if you could come unlock the doors, that'd be great. All right, thanks, bye. And he hangs up, and then starts screaming and pounding on the doors again.
And then, finally, out of the blue, takes a potted plant and throws it through the door.
Yeah.
Steps out, looks at Garrett, who's, like, visibly shaken, and just goes, I've seen scarier.
It was outstanding. Really was outstanding. All right. Schooled on this week?
Yes.
All right. See?
Oh, this was the good one. This was Well, I mean, they're all good, but this was Run, Rick, Run.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Mellow so Halloween.
That,
and
yes, that Toby's Aunt Julie is going to adopt Toby. Mm-hmm. So
now she's not Aunt Julie. She's just Julie.
Right. And what's his face? Tim Meadows' character. He's like, oh, well, teachers aren't allowed to date students' parents because I got hurt once. So that means that's how it is. And Mellow, like, always obeys the rules. And
so he breaks up with her.
Yeah. And then when he finds out that it's not actually a district rule, it's just this one guy's rule, you know, he goes, starts dating her again.
Well, he talks to the principal and he's like, look, you know, just because he quit. That's what it was. He quit. He was like, fine, then I will quit.
That's right. He was going to quit the school. Yeah. That's right. Quit the job.
And he's like, dude, are you really going to do this? Are you really going to give up your job? And he's like, I love her, man. You know, she really does something for me. This all started, this episode all started because they were talking about couples costumes.
Yes.
And so Rick didn't understand that. He's like, what are you talking about? And because Lainey and what's his name there?
Whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. They were playing Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Which was pretty funny, actually.
It was. Yeah.
Barry. So he didn't understand that. And they were like, well, find out what she likes. I don't know. I'll go to ask Toby. And Toby said that, you know, her favorite movie was Forrest Gump. So he watched the movie, dressed up like Forrest Gump, ran over to her house. And she's like, what are you doing? And he goes, I wanted to be a couple's costume. So I'm Forrest Gump, which is your favorite movie. And I just watched it once. So now it's my favorite movie. Air Bud gets bumped down one.
And you can be my bitch.
And he actually has a park bench there. She's like, how about if I just be Jenny? Okay, that'll work too. Yeah,
I'm gonna go put this back at the hospital, whatever it was. Yeah. So the backstory on this as well was apparently the middle schoolers like to scare the elementary students because they do the annual costume parade through the building, mm-hmm. and the middle school students stand on each side while the kids come through, and their right job, if you will, is to scare the little kids.
Yep.
And Lainey wants to put an end to this because it's not fair. Well, right. We were scared when we were little. Now it's our turn to scare them. It's almost like, stop the madness, end the cycle, this and that. And so they basically make the middle school kids don't scare the little kids this time. And I was like, oh, my thought on the watch is, I'm like, that's fucking dumb. No school actually does this. Oh, it's based on actual events.
Because
Adam Goldberg's school actually did this.
They showed Adam Goldberg's video.
They showed the home video of it. And it's like, why would any school do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the things I really enjoy about the shows, when you meet the real CB or the real Meller. They show footage or pictures or whatever it is.
Yep. I like that when it like pans up to the second floor and you see the window cracked and those kids looking like they're going to kill. And it says, real middle schoolers.
Yes. So, Schooled once again was excellent.
Yep. Did you watch Perfect Harmony?
I did.
I meant to write it down. What was it? It was like Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Instead of Hallelujah.
Yeah, Hallelujah. Yeah, okay, so first of all, the show opens with them going, instead of going and singing Christmas carols to tell about the Hallelujah, they sing Christmas. You just go watch this. Go find it on YouTube. I'm sure it's there. Just go watch this somewhere. But they go and they do caroling, but they do Halloween versions of Christmas songs using different lyrics. It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious.
It's awesome.
And it's all to promote this Hallelujah, which is basically like the, instead of going out trick-or-treating, come to the church, we'll do stories, we'll have candy.
It'll be like Sunday school kind of thing.
Yeah, basically like we're going to do bobbing for apples, but there's no apples in there, and what are you doing, right? I don't know. Because I can't remember what the whole point was, but it's like you're bobbing for apples, but don't drink the water, and I don't know. It was dumb, regardless.
Yeah.
However, what's her face? Ginny.
Yeah.
Yeah. She wants to manage the diner on Halloween night because she's going to be out of town, and she thinks she can do it, but she's afraid to ask. And
so Boss Man basically makes her do it.
No, Arthur's like, hey, Jenny wants to be the manager. You know what I mean?
He does it for her.
Yeah, he asks for her. And we find out how much that – well, the last episode – when Red was on it, Kirkwood Smith, you know, we find out that, you know, he can't leave this town because of his wife.
Right.
This is where she wanted to be. This is where she is. I can't ever leave here because I need to be here with her. And so basically that's, you know, he's hanging his hat on that. And Jenny messes up, and then there's a costume contest. It's a $100 first prize. It's a $1,000 first prize.
Because as she says later, I'm a damn good manager. I may not be a good proofreader, but I'm a damn good manager.
And so Arthur tries to help. So he goes home to get this costume on so he could win. But, of course, he doesn't provide eggs to trick eggs, candy to some trick-or-treaters because he's out of candy, so he gets egged. So then he shows up in his tuxedo with Tails, and Jenny's freaking out, and people are starting to boo, and we're going to sue Adams and this and that. And so he goes and cuts it up so he can be a Chippendale, and then he proceeds to dance. It was hilarious. I mean, hilarious and inappropriate. Thrusting his pelvis in that woman's face, the odd dancing, the shorter cook being like, more groove, or whatever it was. And then when it cuts to Adams, like, I mean, Jenny, like, putting whipped cream on the camera so Adams can't see what's going on, and then pulling the fire alarm, and on, and then it pans back across to Arthur, and he's on the counter doing a split, and he's like, I'm going to be a few minutes.
Yeah.
It was all hilarious.
It absolutely was.
And it shows what he was willing to do to help her.
Exactly, yeah.
So he gets a lot more character in this. The other backstory is Georgia and Dwayne Dwayne tells Wayne he can't be a part of their prank war because Georgia thinks it's stupid.
Right.
Now, I at no point in time did I think she was in on it.
Right.
I thought she was legit just being an annoying hag about it.
Because that happens all the time.
Yes. And instead, she, like, that was all part of the plan. You know, where Dwayne can't be in the prank war. He can't do this. We're not going to wear matching costumes. You know, I'm doing couples costume with Georgia. We're going to actually go do this instead, and on and on and on. And they get back to the church, and he shows up and gives Wayne, like, the can where you get the mixed nuts with the snake inside. And
yep.
This and that, and then he accidentally knocks the priest over, who a sword falls through him, and he's bleeding out and freaking out, and it was hilarious.
And it turns out it was all one elaborate scheme.
Yes. It was funny. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I like that show.
Oh, and Jenny gets promoted to full-time manager of the
diner. Yep.
Has this been picked up for a full season?
I don't know. Probably.
I hope so. I hope it was, because I enjoy this. I'm glad you checked it out.
Yes.
Kate enjoys it as well. We both enjoy it.
Good.
Together. We do plan on watching the Paul Rudd series on Netflix at some point.
I finished it this week.
Is it good?
I will say this. It's good. There are some humorous spots in it, but it is more drama and dark. Mm-hmm. Not drama as in, like, a hardcore drama, but it's definitely more serious and more dark.
Okay.
Like I was trying to say last week, because I could tell you this, and I didn't want to ruin it for Kate, but basically a lot of the episodes, either, like, you'll see something happen from shitty Paul Rudd's point of view, and then the next episode, you'll see things happen from good Paul Rudd's point of view.
Yep.
Sometimes they'll even do it mid-episode. Like, you know me, I'm not a big fan of the whole cold open and then 24 hours earlier.
Me neither.
But they'll do that sometimes midway through an episode where you're, like, just getting into the swing of things and you're like, what the hell is going on? Suddenly it'll be like 5 days ago. And you're like, oh, yes, here we go. We're going to get it from the other side of the Rudd. Get it? Rudd instead of Rudd.
I know. I picked up on that, yeah.
But yeah. So
that was good stuff.
It was enjoyable. They set it up for a second season. Not the best way, but they set it up for a second season.
The Rookie.
Yes.
Okay, I had problems with this episode.
Okay.
I had tremendous problems with this episode. So they're tasked. Backstory real quick.
Yeah.
Chen's mom shows up at the house because her and her dad are having a fight. That's the backstory. She makes it so they can get along better by showing them how expensive it would be to hire divorce lawyers and get divorced. So they get back together. Gone. All right. The premise of this episode is, as they're rookies, this week of training, they need to establish a confidential informant. So they have a week to find a confidential informant, earn their trust, get a tip from them, and make an actionable arrest on this.
Yeah.
And that's no.
No.
Like, there's a lot of shit. that
none of them were actually trying to earn their trust. They were strong-arming everyone.
They were blackmailing everybody.
Everyone.
Yeah. Like, sincerely, like, I had serious problems with this episode.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know what it's like to work for the LAPD. I don't know how it works. You know, I'm not a police officer. I was a dispatcher for 18 years. I have an idea of what happens in law enforcement. Confidential informants, I can't. It just, you just don't go out and find one day.
No. You literally have to earn their trust over months or years of,
yeah.
You know, hey, look, I'm going to look the other way. Just remember that later on.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? Maybe I didn't find that on you. Why don't you just go home, sleep it off?
No, they're just basically bribing or blackmailing or, it's like you said, strong-arming
fucking
everyone.
Threatening some
yeah.
of these people.
Yeah. It's just, it was absurd. It was really, really absurd. I had a lot of issues with that. And I was about to say, you know, with this show, I mean, okay, I get it. They get into a lot of gunfights more than most police do. I can
you think?
I can go with that because it's Los Angeles. This is a dramatic show. I get it, right? That's fine. It makes it more exciting and whatever it is. That's fine. But this week, whatever. Tough Love was, to me, that was a huge issue with that, because that premise just seems so far-fetched and out there, like, that they would say, you have a week to do this or else. And then, of course, next week's episode, or last night's episode, I haven't watched it, as a fucking ballistic missile attack coming in at Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Ballistic missile.
What's happening?
I don't know.
What's happening to the show?
I don't know.
You know what it is? They got picked up for a spring season. So they got extended from the existing season that they have. They're going to come back in the spring because it was supposed to just like end, and now they're, you know,
well, no,
they got the
last season was 20 episodes.
Right. Well, this one, they came into it and they said, we'll give you half a season and see how it goes. Yeah, it's part of my news.
Horseshit.
Yeah.
It's almost like sweet. Anyways, but.
It's reminding me of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Remember how the first season we actually, like, really enjoyed? And
yeah.
then the second season it was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, what did I say? Yeah, Stumptown got a full season pickup and the rookie got a spring season. So.
Anyway, so I had a problem with that this week. But, like, the best, one of my favorite parts in this episode, though, was when Nolan and his new TO roll up on that girl. And he's like, hey, I don't know the names. Hey, Cassandra. someone said that you'd be good to help me out with drugs and da da da. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she starts walking, and her TO goes like, she's got drugs on her now. You got drugs on you now? You know what I mean? Like, just the casual.
Yeah.
And they're slowly driving while she goes to run away, and she runs into a vehicle. I mean,
like,
that
runs
was funny.
Face first yeah. into it and lays down on the ground.
Yeah.
I gotta say, in their little morning briefing when they were yeah. talking about CIs, they, you know, the captain was talking about it, and Bradford. Yeah, sorry. Went full cocks.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was like, CIs are lying liars who lie all the time to get exactly what they want.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, that's cocks.
But here's my problem. So Nolan, yes, that was cocks. It was awesome. Because it's like, was it, they're bastards. Their bastard fills bastards full of bastard cream. Back me up, Bobo.
With a bastard coating.
Yeah, back me up, Bobo. He's right. They're bastards. They're
yeah.
all bastards. Nolan meets this girl, finds drugs on her, forces her to go continue her undercut, her buy, forces her to wear a wire. Like, all this happens in the course of a few hours.
Yeah.
Not a day,
no.
not a 2 weeks, not
no,
a week.
No, they're not setting
she
up a
gets
whole...
brought in, the DA's involved. No, this all happens just like that.
Yep.
Just like that.
I also had a note.
I had a huge problem with that.
Why are wires so big in these shows?
So you like, can see them.
Like, why is it that they're wiring her up and they've got this thing that's bigger than my phone?
Yep.
My phone has a directional mic on it. Two of them, actually. So
does yours. That's how we're recording this show.
And I could just open it up, tap a little button, and suddenly I'm recording voices of everyone around me.
Yeah.
So why do they have these great big bulky boxes with the wire coming out? They got to tape it.
Because that's what you're used to seeing on TV. And if they just went here and put a button on their shirt and it's not a James Bond movie,
yeah.
then it's not as exciting. But I just had tremendous problems with all of that.
Yep.
And then he finds another CO like straight away because he basically – why are you arresting these people to begin with? Why are you only arresting these people to make them confidential informants?
And why are they making it out like confidential informants or personal chefs or something like that you would hire for?
Yeah.
Like West and Lopez going to the golf course, and like this guy's like, oh yeah, you know, go get rid of that stolen car lot that, you know, the guy's sleeping with my ex-wife, and then maybe I'll be your confidential informant. And the FBI is like, no, he's our confidential informant. And they're like, oh, well, now we did this thing and we're pissing on the FBI and now you belong to us. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's a real thing.
I had real issues with this episode.
The only thing that I liked was at the end of the Chen storyline where, you know, the girl was shooting up the handbags because she hates her stepmother.
Yes.
And they go in and they arrest her.
Oh, yes.
And the housekeeper walks up and goes, officers, would you like to see where Mrs. keeps all of her drugs? And they're like, yes.
Yes, we would.
There was also the B story that was going on here, which is that Nolan's son, who's now 20, shows up because he spent all of his Europe money to buy a ring for his now fiance, who twice in the episode makes the joke, I'm pregnant, and thinks it's funny, which it's not. No. And then, you know, the overnight detective there.
Harold Perrineau.
Love him.
Does a background check on her.
Yep. I love how, you know, Nolan's coming in and he's going home because he's like, oh, I've been up all night. You know, I'll see you later.
What I like about this episode.
Yep.
And that. You just can't run a background check on someone.
Right.
You can't. Like, it's like you, like, as a citizen, you can go to the State Bureau of Identification. You can request a background check. You can pay your $30 or $35 fee, and you'll get non-conviction information.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get conviction information. Sorry. You won't get any non-conviction information. And it doesn't happen like that. But there's a process. Some of it may be redacted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As a law enforcement officer, you can request a criminal history and you get it back practically instantly. However, you have to have a reason for it. You have to have a case number attached to it. You have to have something to fall back on to show why you wanted this background check.
Why SBI?
So that way you can't just run one for the sake of running one. Right. It doesn't work that way. Yes, you can look someone up in-house to see if there's anything in-house on them. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that Harold Perrineau's character did a background check, and he said, don't worry, I tied it to this case here, so if anyone asks, it's in relation to this and blah, blah, blah. That was a little thing that made me go.
It's like an open robbery or something like that where they haven't caught anybody yet. So.
That was a little thing that made me like kind of happy because like when I write my short stories or my stories, whatever it is, I have a really hard time writing anything law enforcement related and not sticking to what I know actually happens and works. And yes, when I watch these TV shows, I have to have suspension of disbelief for certain things, but there's just little things where I'm like, no, that's not how it happens. And in this case, I can be like, they got this one right. They got this little detail right, and it made me happy.
Yep.
Not that it matters much. But yeah, he ran a background check on her, and first, you know, he's like, you should look at it. And Nolan's like, I don't know if I should, So he goes and visits his ex, who works at the hospital, and she's like, yeah, you shouldn't look at this. And then calls him, is like, all right, I looked at it. You need to hear this.
I like, too, how they were first talking, walking down the hallway, and his new, you know, TO just goes, oh, you two used to date.
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
What?
And she's like, I read people.
Yeah. I like his new TO this episode. She's definitely lightened up from the first time we met her and the second time. And
yep. And the family lawyer came in.
Yes.
I like when they had that little exchange, and he's like, so, what was that all about? She's like, nothing. What was that report that you got? Nothing. All right, then.
Yeah. Or like when the family lawyer comes in and he's talking to her and Nolan goes up, oh, hey, whatever. You're like, Nolan, nice to meet you. And she's like, yeah, that's none of your business. Let's go.
Yeah.
But no, I enjoyed the little parts, like I said, but I just overall I had a hard time with this episode. And
do you think Chen and West are going to start fucking?
Probably. Oh, yeah. Probably.
You know, because at the end there, they're sitting on the couch, and he's like, you got together with Nolan because he was a 40-year-old man who was just out of a relationship, and you knew that it was safe. You need to be wild, and you need to – because she keeps talking about how, oh, I'm not with anybody. Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, he needs to calm down a little bit, and she needs to get – I don't know. They're gonna start sleeping together. It bothers me. But anyway.
New Amsterdam, no Good Doctor this week.
Correct.
New Amsterdam was interesting. Did you watch it?
Yeah, that was interesting.
So, essentially, it's kind of funny because it opens up where it's like it's dead, and then there's an explosion of people that come through the door of the ER, and the girl with the injury and the drug addict doctor there, she handles it all in stride, mm-hmm. and she's kind of proud of herself. And then basically what we find out, I'll just cut to the long and the short of it all. This was like a church group on some sort of trip to the city. Mm-hmm. They had rented a van. Everyone paid the $7.50 insurance fee for if anything happens, you know, for their medical coverage up to like $250,000 each or some shit like that. The woman purposely crashes the van so they can all go and get checked out at the hospital. Because all these girls, all these women have all these illnesses and things like that going on, but they don't go to the doctors because they can't afford it, or the doctor's too far away, or they think they're fine. But I mean, like, one's got cancer, one's got diabetes, one's got a heart. I mean, like, there's some pretty serious things wrong. Mm-hmm. So the hospital's taking care of all this, and obviously they find out, that's interesting. Like, they put two and two together. So, of course, she at first is going to admit that she, you know, crashed. Because that's what you have to do because religion, mm-hmm. their religious group or whatever. And then while the police are taking away, she goes to a diabetic reaction because she's got this diabetic stuff. And the cop's like, oh, could that have happened while she was driving? And Max is like, yeah, it could.
Yeah.
Put a bow on that. That was the big story.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into the whole Down syndrome kid who's pregnant and wants an abortion.
No.
Right, garbage. I don't want to get into that. I'm so fucking pissed I can think of it as Raleigh. It's not Raleigh. What's his name? Frome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes to the adoption agency without his husband, and she's like, oh, where's your husband? Oh, he can't make it, but we're both so on board. And she's like, okay, no. She'd be like, we need to speak to your husband, guy.
Yeah.
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 So yeah, this is horseshit. What else? Oh, Martha keeps wanting to help Max and, Dr. Helen, whatever she is on this show,
yep.
wants to help Max. And she's like, what if we got a bottle service? What if we got a diaper service? What if we send cleaners over to clean your house?
And then she does.
Well, but Max is learning to, based on what he learns the lesson from the driver of the van, who crashed the van to get everyone this help, that, you know, these women weren't going to get help on their own unless she did something.
Right.
So maybe he should also realize that he needs help and he should let someone help him. So he initially agrees, but then the cleaners show up and he like at first is going to let them come in, but then he doesn't let them. Mm-hmm. And then of course you see he's just placed a rug over his wife's bloodstains on the carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got some pretty bad trauma going on that he's not dealing with, which that'll come to a head at some point because he doesn't have cancer anymore.
Right.
Are you a little annoyed that they made this big deal about him having cancer in the first season and then now he just, oh, he doesn't have cancer anymore because we found some obscure testing way to get rid of cancer and it worked for him, but it doesn't work for everyone. And, you know, like, it just.
I mean, at least they're keeping moving forward with that so that, you know, they're trying to use that on other people, I guess.
I know, but I don't know. It was a little annoying.
You got to change your clock, by the way.
I know. It's an hour.
Keeps throwing me off. Yeah. I look up there.
Any moment now, my wife's going to walk through the door and just probably start talking and be like, are you guys recording? Like John said earlier, and we are, because she knows we were.
Yep.
Emergence. Thoughts?
I will say this. The show does a good job of picking up right where the last episode left off each time.
Yep.
You know? One thing that I didn't like in this episode, I know that Mr. Krabs is sick, and I know that he – I could have gone with the Kurgan, but I think he's much more famous for being Mr. Krabs. So
I always think of him from Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Or Starship Troopers, you know.
Oh, yeah. See, I go more Shawshank. I forgot he was in Starship,
yeah. Well, I mean, he was the hard-nosed drill sergeant who demoted himself so that he could go fight and then nuke the bugs in the end.
Yeah.
He saved everyone. Anyway. Stop.
What?
Okay. I get that he's sick, but driving down the road and then passing out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who passes out like that? Where they kind of, like, lean forward and put their head on the steering wheel? Like, why wouldn't he pass out, like, falling to the back or the side or something like that?
And you would think he'd be like, oh, I should pull over. I might be dangerous.
And why is it that when you're on a TV show, when you've got a truck going this way and a semi coming the other way, even if they're in the opposite lanes of each other and everything's fine and it's a beautiful sunny day and the roads are clear and everything's fine, why is it that we always get sound effect of the semi honking before there's any cause for concern? Like, it's just two people driving down the road. Honk, honk, honk. Yes, we know it's a big truck. We can see. We have eyeballs. We don't need you to tell us that, TV people.
Does it sound
but it always happens.
Yes,
like,
it
always happens. So, yeah, then, of course, he passes out and swerves perfectly. Okay, first off, I have a hard enough time jumping lanes and then
right,
perfect. If I passed out on the wheel, I'm going off the road one way or the other. I'm not going to swerve into the other lane and then aim straight at the next vehicle.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
I don't think it does either.
But, of course, they're heading right straight towards that semi, and what's going to happen? Oh, Piper puts her hand on her sister's shoulder and...
And, yeah.
E.T.'s the truck.
Yep, basically.
Da-na-na-na.
And then later on, you have to tell me the truth. Do you have superpowers?
Yeah. We also find out that Joe there decided to arrest, what's his name there? Jeremy Bentham.
Yep.
From Lost.
John Locke.
John Locke, Jeremy Bentham. Decided to arrest him. Because, you know, they had a little bit of I mean, it was shitty evidence. It was
bad.
It was weak.
She very stereotypically or classically would have overplayed her hand.
Oh, God, yeah. She's like, oh, we're arresting you and we're taking you in. And now you'll never get to the girl again. And, whoa, there's a lawyer in there?
Wait a second.
The DA's in there?
Wait, my DA's like, dude, you don't have enough evidence. Bring me some evidence. I'll charge the guy.
Come on. The DA wouldn't already know all the evidence and wouldn't already be looking at. But anyway.
Right.
So, yeah. And then Locke's just like, he's so cool in this whole show. You know, he's just like, well, I've tried to be nice to you so far, but now you're fucked.
Now I'm going
to
make your life a little hard.
And the first thing that he does is his company buys up the company that her husband works for and lays off some workers, starting with him. Like, he was the first one to go.
Yeah.
Don't even know if any other ones were laid off.
But he was the first one, and I like but she comes clean immediately. Oh, this is what happened. I'm so sorry.
Well, it was great because she's like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, that's not your fault. She goes, actually, it is. He's like, really?
Yeah.
And then she explains it. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, it is your fault. But then again, he doesn't know me. He doesn't know you. This ain't going to stop us. We're going to be a united front. And by the end of the season, we're probably going to get back together. I can't guarantee that. I still look at them and I think there's just a very odd, weird couple and they shouldn't be together.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't look right.
They just don't work.
No, because he'll always be Turk. He'll be that childish, goofy, you know, mess around with JD kind of guy. And she's always, in every role, she's always the stern, hard-nosed, you know, by-the-books law enforcement lady.
So yeah, that's true.
It's just, I think that's more than anything, it's there.
Well, it's like her
TV personality.
Her in Fargo.
Yeah.
She was the same type of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything that I see her in, she's like, well.
Emergence. That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
You called it, Mike. So in Downward Dog, she kind of was. She was in, like.
What now?
Downward Dog.
What was that?
It was a very short-lived show where her dog spoke. He was the narrator of the show. And he would talk about how, you know, her life wasn't doing that well and he was trying to help her out. It was a cool show. I liked it, but it was only on for like four episodes.
Oh, see, I don't really remember it. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. So, Emergence.
Yeah. It was okay. It was O.T.
What else you got?
I didn't watch any more Castle Rock. Don't know if I will. Did you watch any of that yet?
Nope.
Yeah. I didn't give it a very... very big sell. Stumptown. Did you watch the most recent episode?
I did. I'm liking this show more and more. I'm glad it got a full season pickup.
Once again, this is a scenario where the lieutenant seems to be lightening up as the show goes on.
Yes.
So in this episode, what's his name?
Ray?
Gray, yeah. Gray goes missing, of course, because he's abducted and he's got to go break into this thing and do this job.
Yeah.
And
he's cool about it. Like,
yeah.
Not cool as in, like, he wants to break in, but he's just like, all right, I know how to handle this.
He's like, basically, he's like, look, I'm going to do this and then we're done. That's the end of it.
I'm keeping my head down. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm good at what I do. He's not trying to, like, send messages on his phone.
Nope.
He's not trying to break away. He's like, I'm just going to do this and get it over with.
And then the bad guy's like, all right, you know the buddy that your buddy that we brought along that I'm forcing to help us, who actually hasn't done anything and doesn't actually contribute at all to this heist in any way, shape, or form, we're going to kill him when this is over. Because he wants us cut up front. And Gray's like, well, no, let me talk to him. It'll be fine. And so then the big bad guy looks at another bodyguard. He's like, let's make sure he has motivation to do what I want him to do. So he goes and takes
Ansel.
Ansel, yeah. Yeah, he goes and takes Ansel.
Because in the meantime, they need somebody to watch the bar. And so they invite the food truck guy.
Oh, no. Gray asks Dex to watch the bar.
Yeah, which and she's then, not going
to
do that.
And then the chef quits.
Yes.
Then she asked Tukey to come in and cook for them.
That's right.
Keep the bar going. Yep. Yeah.
He's a cool character.
Uh-huh.
I liked him when he had to go undercover, air quotes.
Excuse me.
Sometime.
Thank you.
A couple episodes ago when we were dealing with a private investigator.
Yes.
Which that's also going on in this episode is that the woman from the private investigators board, who I really thought was like a Janine Garofalo lookalike.
No, it's Janine Garofalo.
Is it?
Yeah.
I looked it up on IMDb and I didn't see her name on there.
That's got to be her.
Okay.
I that's who I thought it was the second I saw her.
But yeah, she's basically there to process Dex's application and see if she gets to be a private investigator, which, you know, the show wouldn't have much merit if it didn't happen.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
So she does her interview at Bad Alibi because she's got to watch the bar. Ansel goes to pick up some cilantro, and this other guy goes, hey, Gray wanted me to give you a ride. And so Ansel goes with him, but then realizes something's wrong.
They think that he is a food critic?
Yes.
Yeah.
But Ansel goes with the guy, and he thinks something's wrong, but he's a very trusting kid. So he gives, like, the waitress at the restaurant they're at, like, a card that says, this is my name, call this number, you know, I'm in danger.
Call my sister to come pick me up.
Yeah, and so she calls.
Which is cool.
Yeah, no. And then so Dex shows up and sits down and, you know, gun to the groin's like, hey, buddy, how's it going?
Knife to the groin.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, how's it going? And she's like, oh, Dex, how's it? Yeah. Why don't you go head out to the car? I'll meet you out there and everything. And the guy plays it cool. He's like, oh, yeah. You know, like he, which is funny.
Uh-huh.
And then they go out to the, they gets to fighting out in the kitchen in the back.
And that was a pretty good fight.
That was a good battle.
Yeah.
Was it the police show? Oh, no. The chef comes back in, and he's like, hey, you might want to call the police about that guy who's all tied up. Oh, no, wait, hold on. Hoffman shows up, right? Yes, okay. Hoffman shows up.
I didn't have that many notes on this.
Because Dex calls him and says, you need to meet me here now. So Hoffman shows up because he's been told to go on vacation to get away from Kane because he's too close to this type of thing. You know what I mean? Because Hoffman's CI that he established after years of work and trust and everything and became friends was killed by Kane.
Yeah.
That's how a CI is formed. And, he's killed by Kane. And so Hoffman wants revenge. So Hoffman's the one that shows up at the restaurant.
And says, I'm the one that's going to put him down, basically.
Basically, yeah. But shows up at the restaurant and says... And that's when Dex is like, hey, that guy's part of Kane's crew or whatever. But long and the short of it's this.
You can't say that 10 minutes in.
I know, but I'm just going all over the place. Gray basically helps them, you know, get Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Hoffman's going to kill Kane, but then the lieutenant shows up and orders him down and does.
Yeah.
They arrest him, this and that. Everyone's happy that Kane's been arrested. He's not a fugitive. He's back and da-da-da-da. And he said, Lieutenant says to Hoffman, like, so what are we doing with Gray? Oh, you mean my confidential informant that was helping me from the start? And Lieutenant's like, oh, is that the route we're going?
Yeah.
Yep, he was very cooperative and was very very cooperative and helping right from the start. Funny, I don't remember seeing that paperwork come across my desk. Oh, I must have forgotten to file it in all the hecticness. Don't worry, I'll get it to you. I better get that post-dated paperwork, you know.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that part. because it ties it like, okay, Gray's in the clear.
Right.
I do like that Dex is pissed at him. You put Ansel in trouble and she punched
him. Oh, yeah. And I love not only that she punched him, but that Jake Johnson kept like selling it. He kept going back and putting his hand on there.
And was like, but then he doesn't say like, oh, Dex, you're over there. He's like, he genuinely felt bad getting Ansel in trouble or Ansel in danger.
And he said, everything that I have done for the past 48 hours was to keep him and you safe.
Yes, which is true.
Yep.
And she'll get that. She'll be fine by the next episode. I enjoy the show. It's funny, though, because like Kate and I are watching How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing her on the two different versions, the two different roles are so far apart from each other.
Yeah.
So. All right.
What else we got?
Amsterdam, Stumptown, this is cool, good play, movie. American Horror Story.
Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, really, huh?
I watched it.
Oh, you,
I don't know why I'm still watching it, but I watched it.
There's just some few episodes left, probably.
I don't know, man.
So this is The Lady in White, and this actually opens in 1948. And basically, we find out that Richter, or Mr. Jingles, he was a little kid at this camp. It had a different name.
Oh, he wasn't little.
Well, okay. He was 12, 13, whatever it was. He was a fat kid. Doesn't matter. But he went to this camp in 1948, and his mom was there, and she was the cook. And the only reason why she was there was for
money.
Well, money, the free child care, et cetera, et cetera. Room and board for the summer all paid for. And Richter's little brother, Bobby, dies in a bad accident.
Oh, my God, it was bad.
Where he's swimming in the lake, and the boat propeller backs into him.
Okay, now first off,
yeah,
why is she blaming the brother? I mean, granted, he was off perving on the lifeguard who was screwing the girl.
Oh, yeah. But he was watching them have the sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Creepiest way possible.
Yeah.
Could have been creepier if it was on HBO and he had his hand down his pants, like stroking himself.
I'm surprised they didn't do it on this. I'm not going to lie.
But so the kid jumps into the water to swim.
Yeah. And he's doing some flips underwater.
And he's fine.
It looks like he's having a great time swimming. Yeah.
It's there's a dock there.
And
were a bunch of kids that were just swimming.
The boat 4 feet away
doesn't
look before backing up.
Yeah.
After the kid jumps into the water next to them, they didn't hear the splash because the engine wasn't on.
And he's still splashing along.
Yeah.
And again, it's not like, oh, he's a weak swimmer and he fell in and he drowned. No, there's just a kid playing in the – and like you said, they turn on the motor of the boat and they back it up and chunk him right in the head. And lifeguard should have been blamed. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Guys in the boat.
Yep.
Yeah. Damn right.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But the brother?
No, because she clearly did like him.
Yeah, and she told him, don't you take your eyes off your brother.
Yeah.
And he did, so that he could go watch them.
Right. So basically, Richter shows up at the camp in 1989, and they jump him. Because Richter's like, hey, wait, why are you still here dressed like that guy? Because he's like, wait, this guy killed us. So they jump him. They don't kill him because Montana says not to kill anyone right now.
Right. Not until the concert.
So they bring him to all the other dead sorority counselors. And they mention a lady in white that they're afraid of. And so he says, oh, that's my mother. And then he tells the story. Then we get the flashback now where he tells the story that after this happened, their mother snapped one night, killed all, because like, the massacre in 1970, whatever, wasn't the first time that happened. It was actually 1948, and Lavina then killed everybody. That's his mother's name, Lavina. She killed all the counselors, and then she killed some other people, and then she was actually going to kill her own son, and he killed her in self-defense. And she's still there. So, of course, Montana has one of the guys lead Jingles to where Lavina likes to hang out, and he goes in, they have a big discussion where basically – she's the worst mother ever.
Ever. Oh, my God. She was a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. I mean, just ever. At the end of the episode, he's sitting on the dock mourning his brother.
Mm-hmm.
She shows up and is like, you're not allowed to be here. And he's like, I missed him every day. I named my son after him, this and that.
Yeah.
And she's like, you need to go home to your son now because, you know, Richter's coming and you don't know how powerful he is and this and that. And she's like, yeah, I do. And then she's like, oh, you made the deal with the devil as well? She's like, yep. And then she says to him, well, you should probably kill yourself here then, because if he kills you, you won't be trapped here like us.
Right.
You'll be.
Satan holds your soul. Yeah. So if he kills you, you're not coming back.
Yeah. But
if you kill yourself,
yeah,
then you're locked in here like us. And he
guts himself.
Cries out to his son. And he's like, I won't let my whatever.
And then he just commits seppuku. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the other end of things, we've got Brooke.
Donna and Brooke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, like, we get to see a montage of Brooke being nursed back to health because Donna tells her about the drug that she gave her. And how, you know, she's basically going to be angry and violent and, you know, got to get it out of her system, and nurses her back. And then Brooke's still like, go fuck yourself. She doesn't care about things. You know, she was trapped there for 1,100 days or something like that and was on death row. But then when she sees the flyer and finds out that, you know, they're going to have a music concert, she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That woman is profiting off. She's like, no, I'm going there and I'm going to kill her. And Donna's like, no, you don't. No, you. So they go to a diner.
Yeah.
First, Donna takes her to, was the roller skating first?
Yeah.
Yeah. She takes her to a roller rink and Brooke's like, oh, I didn't know they had these places. And she's like, they don't. There's barely any of them left.
That's still true now, 30 years later.
I know. Isn't it sad?
There's 3 in Maine that I know of, and one is closing. There's 4 in Maine that I know of, and one is closing, like, in 2 weeks. Happy Wheels was awesome when we were a kid.
Yeah, I know. So they have a nice night of roller skating and looking good on the skate floor, and then they get approached by
Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce. Bruce is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce is the, like, this is, what is it now? It's got to be like 1990 because it was 89.
I think it's 89 still.
No,
it's still 1989. That's when the concert is.
Okay. All right. So it's still 1989, but Bruce, played beautifully by Dylan McDermott.
Yeah, he does a great job. Yeah.
Looks like he's stepped right out of the late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, I went with 1970s porn star. Easy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And basically, long and the short of this is that he's been murdering girls all up and down the highway. He fucks with their cars, loosens the distributor cap, then comes over and offers to help and asks for a ride to the next place.
Yeah.
And then murders them in gruesome ways. Like in this case, he put Brooke behind the wheel of the vehicle, tied Donna to a chain behind the vehicle, and told Brooke, you've got two options. Either I'm going to shoot you and you're going to die, or you're going to drive down the road. And then he goes into graphic detail explaining to her about how at 40 miles an hour, the skin just starts peeling off you, like wet paper, and how when you hit a bump, all you have to do is hit one little bump and suddenly you're airborne and you're flopping around. And he goes into graphic detail about what's going to happen to her.
So either you're going to do this to her or I'm going to kill you and I'm going to do this to her, but it's happening to her no matter what. And I love Brooke's response of like, fucker, I told her not to give you a ride anyway.
Yeah, it's her fault.
Yeah.
But then she slams it in reverse.
Yeah.
Goes back really fast, almost hits Donna, slams on the brakes. He
hits the dashboard because no one wears seatbelts.
Right. And then she wrestles the gun. He had a shotgun on her, right? And he fires up through the ceiling. She grabs the pistol from his belt, shoots him in the leg.
Yeah.
And then he gets out and he's like stumping and he's like, oh, oh. She doesn't want to kill him though. Oh, no. No.
Don't forget he killed the cop.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because they got pulled over by a cop and he shot the cop in the head and they tried to take off and he caught up to them in the cop's car.
And he knew Donna's name somehow.
Yes, he did.
But we never found out how.
Nope.
Yeah.
So now they've got him and Brooke's like, oh, no, we're not going to kill you. And they tie him up to a post on the side of the road and then cut off his thumbs.
We can't hitchhike.
So he can't hitchhike anymore.
Yeah. That was sick and twisted.
Yeah. And then Brooke's like, all right, Donna. Take the truck. I don't care. I can walk here. I can walk from here.
Far.
Yeah. There are 2 more episodes.
Donna said he's going to walk with her. Donna goes with her, and they head to the camp.
So the next episode is called Rest in Pieces.
Well, don't forget the Shy Shy.
Hush, oh, hush, yeah.
Iowa. the band shows up.
Are you going to play that song? Yeah, that's our only hit.
That's our only song we have. If we don't play it, if we don't sing that song, we have no reason to be here.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, the whole everyone's murdered already. Yeah. That whole band's already murdered because Ramirez shows up and kills them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Satan's name.
Yeah.
And he talks to the lead singer, and he like, looks down at his hand, and then he looks down, and he goes, "Oh, we've already got your soul." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, when you sign a deal with the devil, you got to know that it's coming due, and you got to pay." And Yeah. So the next episode's called Rest in Pieces, and the final episode is called Final Girl.
Which, I mean, that is a staple of all horror movies, is the final girl.
Yeah.
The Blacklist, Norman Devane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all right. At least we didn't see Liz's mom at all in this episode.
Yeah. I will say this, aside from everything else going on, I didn't really care about the main story. The story about Aram and his new girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, the last episode when he got together with her, it was because he wanted – remember we were like, oh, he's going to become an adrenaline junkie and he's going to want to, like, live the dangerous life. No, this week he went right back. They're like, you haven't called her after 2 weeks? And he's like, no. He's basically scared of Aram again. Right. And when he goes to the party – with her and finds out that they're crashing a wedding, you know, everything is nervous and, oh, geez, oh, I don't know. It was stupidly coincidental that she's like, oh, I grabbed these two name tags. They were the closest ones on the table. Just so happens that his name tag belongs to the guy who Sean Bean is supposed to be meeting up with. Mm-hmm. And so the Russian guy comes in and hands the contact info that was supposed to go to Red. And then it turns out we have a medical file on Red Redding.
Yeah, Red is apparently sick.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's wrong, and Wrestler knows, but don't tell Elizabeth. And
honestly, I would be okay if this was the last season of the show.
Yeah, I'm really starting to lose my luster for the show. It's just not as good as this has got I'm going to call it the supernatural effect.
Yes.
Starts out big, tells a great story, you think the show's all done, hangs on for too many seasons more.
Yes. I think it was supposed to end a few seasons back.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't, they were like, well, shit, what do we do now?
What do we go to? Yeah, exactly. That's it. I don't have any other shows besides Mr. Robot.
Same here.
Did you watch any movies?
I did not. Did you?
Nope. Any trailers?
Yes.
Go.
Yeah, we saw some good trailers this week. One that I watched was End of the Fucking World Season 2. This was...
I didn't know that trailer was out.
Yeah. I didn't send it to you.
Yeah, no.
It's a little weird. I just watched it this morning. It's sung to the... It has music in the background of White Wedding, but it's a very slow, creepy version of White Wedding.
Oh.
And the girl from the first season, of course, you remember the boy from the first season, is dead. Although it was a cliffhanger, you know. But we're led to believe in this trailer, we never see him. She seems to be very depressed, and in several scenes she's wearing a wedding dress and looks like she's getting married. There's a new character that's coming in, a woman who has a very troubling past. They don't give you a lot to go on, but I like the first
season. I'm actually surprised they got a second season.
I am too.
It seemed like a very one-and-done show.
We got to see the really good trailer for The Mandalorian.
Yeah, that was all right. Yeah, that was good. I'm excited.
Freaking good.
So we're just over. We were 8 days out.
Yep. So my buddy Pete Petrie. He sent me a message and he's like, the one thing that bothers me about this trailer is the fact that this guy seems to be using carbonite on all these guys.
Yeah.
And I thought that was exclusively a Cloud City thing. And I said, well, the way I'm looking at it, he didn't realize when this took place in the timeline, which is after Return of the Jedi. It's 5 years after Jedi and like 25 years before The Force Awakens.
Right.
So he didn't realize that. And I said, basically what I'm thinking is it worked so well and word got out to other bounty hunters. They were like, hey, this is the easiest way to bring your prey in. So it kind of spread from there. So he was okay with it after that.
Nice.
Yep. But
no, the trailer looks awesome. I'm super excited about the show, everything I've kind of read about. I haven't read tons of spoilers, but just like the specs that John Favreau there has put out about it. It looks great. And then there's that one thing, like what, the first 10 minutes gives a huge spoiler.
Yeah, they say it's a huge spoiler for Star Wars universe. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Who was that? Yeah, anyway. I'll tell you about that later. Okay. That's an after the podcast.
Oh, okay.
And then my favorite trailer of the week, which is hard to talk because The Mandalorian was phenomenal, but The Witcher.
Yeah, the trailer's pretty badass.
Yeah. I sent it to a buddy of mine, and I was like, hey, what'd you think? He goes, oh, I haven't watched it yet. I don't really, you know, I didn't play the games. I'm like, it doesn't matter. It looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, the show does look amazing.
It looked really cool. Like, there was a scene in there where his eyes were kind of black, and he, you know, like he had veins going down his face. In the lore of the Witchers, they're mutants. They've mutated their bodies so that they can fight these monsters. And one of the things they do is they concoct these potions. Like, they'll have a potion that gives them night vision. They have a potion that makes it so that they're resistant to poison. They have a potion that makes it so that they're stronger and faster. But when they do, like, these potions would kill a normal person.
Right.
When they take them, that's what happens to them. You know, this is why a lot of humans don't like them, because they're very creepy and they're very mysterious. And when at one point when it looks like he uses the Force and throws his hand up and the wind wall kind of knocks those guys away, those are signs that they use. Mm-hmm. So you've got the warlocks and the witches who have actual magic powers. The witchers themselves can use minor magic, like that's the Ard sign, A-A-R-D.
Yep.
And it's basically like a triangle that they draw in the sky, and it makes air blow back their enemies. You know, they've got Igni, which is a fire sign, and things like that. So little cantrip type things. But yeah, it looks like they did a really good job. And of course, we got the Geralt in the bathtub scene, which is famous from The Witcher 3 opening on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never played any of the games either. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not familiar. Charles looks so awesome, I don't care. I'm excited about watching the show.
Yeah.
It looks good. It looks like well-done television.
Yep.
My wife even because she was a big fan of Game of Thrones, and so.
And the creator of this series said that he's got a plan for the next 7 years. So if Netflix will have him, he's got it planned out.
Any other trailers?
Nope, just news.
I got a little bit of news. I don't have any trailers, just what you shared with me. A couple of news things. One, Game of Thrones prequel, House of Dragons, got announced.
After the other one got.
The other prequel that's starring Naomi Watts was canceled, mm-hmm. but they even filmed the pilot for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still canceled. I wonder if that'll ever see the light of day.
I don't know.
Anyways, this takes place 300 years before Game of Thrones. And we get to meet Aegon Targaryen. And it shows like 150-year history of Westeros. And it'll probably be good.
Yeah. It's coming directly to HBO Max.
Yep. So, but no, filming hasn't started, no plans on when it's going to be released, but
nope.
I enjoy this bit. Bob Iger thinks Martin Scorsese probably has never seen a Marvel movie, if that's what he thinks.
I would agree with that.
What you got?
So, the two guys who were responsible for the dumpster fire of season 6 of Game of Thrones,
yeah,
they're not going to be doing a Star Wars franchise now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they had signed this big deal with Netflix, and, you know, the guys at Disney said, well, I don't think that they can focus on multiple big projects at the same time. And they agreed, so they're stepping away. Darn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Netflix is apparently testing the ability to watch shows at faster speeds, like 1.5 speed and double speed. And most of Hollywood is fucking pissed. The filmmakers and the TV show makers are like, don't you fuck with our stuff. We film this a certain way. Now, I listen to podcasts at 1.5 speed, sometimes 1.8. Just because sometimes when you've got dead spots or you've got people just bantering back and forth, like what you and I do, sometimes you just want to get through it quicker. So I'll crank up the speed on that, but not a show.
No.
No. I told you earlier, Stumptown got a full season pickup.
Yep.
Yes. Another Life. Remember the Netflix show that just came out with Katie Sackhoff?
Yeah.
Got a second season for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why either.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't it's. So HBO Max, they had a lot of info on it. It's going to be $14.99 a month. It's coming May of 2020, next year.
Yeah.
Greg Berlanti, you know, Barry Guggenheim.
Barry Guggenheim.
He is going to be producing a Green Lantern series that's going on HBO Max.
I heard about that. And that looks pretty awesome.
That's going to be great. It probably won't tie into the other CW stuff.
No.
This was sad. The In-Between was canceled.
Horseshit.
We knew it was going to happen.
I hope someone picks it up.
I do, too. But we kind of knew that that was coming. 2022.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse
Part 2. Yeah! Peyton Reed is returning for Ant-Man 3.
And nice. It
looks like Michael Douglas is too so nice. Far. This was an interesting one. So, have you ever heard of Clive Barker's Books of Blood?
I've heard of Clive Barker.
Okay. Clive Barker's Books of Blood is a six-volume horror series published in the 1980s. It was short stories and novellas, many of which have already been adapted into feature films, like Lord of Illusions, The Midnight Meat Train, and Candyman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen all those, yeah.
Well,
there's a Candyman reboot coming out.
Yes. Well, there's a film based off his six-volume horror collection is in development at Hulu, which it's Hulu, but maybe they'll do it right. The man bringing the horror master's work to the streaming platform? Take a guess.
Blumhouse, Jason Blum.
Nope.
Sam Raimi?
Nope.
Jordan Peele?
Nope.
I don't know.
Seth MacFarlane.
Really? I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. No, that's not why the Orville's getting delayed.
Nope. So he'll be heading up. Him and his Fuzzy Door production company will be heading up the adaptation of Barker's Tales of Terror. Brandon Braga will make his directorial debut with a feature as well. That's all I've got for news.
We are just 11 days away from the next season of The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, nice.
Just throwing that out there.
Nice.
My news source is just kind of a fun news thing.
Oh, good. I like fun.
Well... the 2005 film Constantine is now canon in the DC
really?
Universe. Expanded universe, if you will.
Interesting.
So, in the new comic book, The Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer number 1, Constantine finds himself practically at the... I'm just reading this. Consummation of the world. A chance is offered for him to go back to a former variant of himself. Former variant of his universe, though this... okay. Go back... to a former variant of his self in this other universe. So he's basically shown at the end of the world, ravaged by a magical war. He's given the chance to return to a version of his life and world that's still intact. He agrees. The magic is triggered, and he's instructed to be the best version of you. So it shows all of these different versions of him. One of these pictures, because you can see it online, one of the versions of him is the Keanu Reeves version of Constantine.
Nice.
So the dark hair, the toothpick, yep. You know, it looks just like him. So essentially, that has now made that film part of the canon. Because, you know, John Constantine, he's British, he's blonde-haired, he's not dark-haired and not British like in the Keanu Reeves film, but I thought that was pretty neat.
Thanks.
We always seem to like these little comic book things where they loop things back around together and everything. So that's it for everything besides Mr. Robot, which I don't even want to talk about it a whole lot.
Well played.
Thank you.
Well played.
Thank you very much. So if you don't want to hear about the most recent episode from last night for us, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, now that everybody's gone that doesn't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
This was brilliant. This was, okay, it would have been very easy to go, all right, they're just reusing a bit that's been done before, because it's not done a lot, but it is done.
Right.
Usually the most famous incident I could think of was the episode of Buffy called Hush.
Never saw it.
It's phenomenal. Really, honestly, you'd be doing yourself a favor to go back and watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was good TV. But anyway, so this episode is episode 405.
Method Not Allowed.
Method Not Allowed. Not many notes on it.
No, there isn't. There's literally two lines of dialogue.
And I went back and rewound and watched to make sure that I could write them down explicitly.
Okay, good. So the show opens on Christmas morning.
Yep. Right after all the other stuff happened in the last episode.
Elliot lights the van on fire, and it's standing there burning. And that's the last we see of Mr. Robot, too.
Yes.
We don't see Christian Slater through this whole episode. We see him at the very beginning when the van is – that van is on fire.
I will also say that somebody picked up a phone. I believe it was Tyrell's phone because there was his wife and kid.
Yeah.
We see somebody pick it up and stick it in black jeans. You assume it's Elliot, but we never actually pan out and see that
it's Elliot. I thought it was him.
Yeah.
Because the next step is him burning the van.
Yep.
But maybe it wasn't. You're right. Darlene sees the black smoke. She rolls up. She sees the van on fire, doesn't know what's going on, and then Elliot knocks on the passenger window.
Yep.
And she says...
She starts driving away. We've been hearing Ode to Joy playing.
Yes.
And she starts driving away, and he's just kind of panting and looking up at the ceiling. And she says, "It's cool, dude. We don't have to talk."
And they don't. It took me a while to realize. Like, we're 20 minutes. Too. I'm like 20 or 25 minutes in. I'm just like, holy shit, there's been no dialogue this episode. Yeah. And I went here to my notes, and I wrote the note. Darlene said we don't have to talk, and we're 25 minutes, there's no dialogue. And then you text, you message me, I message you, this is awesome. And you message me, there's been no dialogue.
Even to the point where, and I'm just jumping ahead for a second, but even to the point where the security guard is watching Die Hard.
Yeah.
And it's the scene where McClane is in the ductwork, and he lights the lighter, and he's supposed to say, we'll go out to the coast, get together, have a few laughs. But before he even opens his mouth to do that, they pan away to something else.
Yeah.
So there is music, and you can hear people singing in the music, so there are voices in that respect, but there is never spoken dialogue.
There's maybe some audible grunts or groans or sighs.
Yes. Yes. Exhalations.
Whatever.
Yes.
But there's no dialogue, and everything's done via visually, text message, or whatever it is, instant messaging, some sort of written form. It's brilliant. Just go watch it.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
It's awesome. I
don't even want to get into the details because it was so well done. We could just do the broad summation, which is that Dom has been tipped off to the burning
van. Well, she's not been tipped off, been forced to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And... again, I read the Vice's thing where they talk to the hackers about stuff, and a lot of this episode was social engineering, which was great.
Yeah.
But, Dom couldn't do anything at the crime scene because she's FBI and it's local jurisdiction. She had no reason to be there. So she had to go to the police station and hack into their computers and even said, "I couldn't get jurisdiction at the crime scene. I had to do it through text message."
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we've got her doing that. We've got Elliot and Darlene basically break into Virtual Realty to get to the servers so that they can get the basically gave themselves
Cypress National Bank
to Cypress National Bank.
But so it's almost like a heist movie.
It's very much a heist movie.
And Elliot runs some firmware, takes the cameras down for 40 minutes, so they only have 40 minutes to do this. Yeah. And
he's updating the firmware, and as the hackers were pointing out, the thing about that is that they're doing them serially. So instead of updating every camera all at once, they're saying, "Okay, camera one, we're updating you. Okay, you're done. Okay, camera two, we're updating you." And that's why they're all down the whole time. And it won't go back up until all of them are done, which is why a lot of people don't update their firmware.
Yes. So when the guard catches on to what's going on and then he's looking for them, did you feel yourself full of tension?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, me too.
Dude, I was tense this whole episode.
Yes.
And this is 10 to 11 on a Sunday night when I'm supposed to be working the next morning.
Right, exactly. Same here.
We're supposed to be relaxing in bed and unwinding and getting ready for... No. I'm tense the whole time. And having no dialogue made it worse.
Oh, yeah. And then Elliot takes the police on this chase.
Holy shit, was that awesome.
And I'm watching this and I'm like, why aren't there more cops? Oh, it's Christmas morning. It's not that the cops aren't out. It's not that the police aren't working. It's Christmas morning.
Yeah.
So this kind of makes sense.
And the fact that at first I was like, why are both of them running after him? Why wouldn't one of them have taken the car and one of them run? Because it was just an instinctive thing. They saw this guy go running and they were like, let's get him.
Yeah. You really should go watch it. If you're listening to this, you're a fan of the show, you already watched it.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you're not a fan of the show, but you're just listening, whatever, go to the USA Network app, log in, watch the episode on demand, whatever you need to do.
And every other episode we could talk about and we can get into what this person was doing and what this person said. Watching Price with his little, getting together for that meeting.
Yeah.
Because that meeting is happening. And so the way that it was he got a bill that said, go outside the E-Corp building, give $20 to the
trombone player. Yeah.
Who tips his hat, and there's a receipt in there for a dry cleaner. And when he gets the suit from the dry cleaner, there's an invitation telling him the time and place.
This was such a visual masterpiece that you need to go watch it.
Yes.
That's how I feel about it.
And then I will say this without giving names away.
Yeah.
But the episode ends with, it's Krista on the street.
Yeah.
And someone walks up to her. And then the second line of dialogue in the show, which is the very last scene of the entire episode, is him looking at her and saying, "It's time we talked."
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, we start with, "We don't have to talk, so nobody does."
Yeah.
And then he ends it with, "It's time we talked."
Yeah.
Credits. Come on.
Yeah. It was good.
Come on.
It was good.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That was just brilliant.
But the facial expressions were amazing. The tension that they built through this whole thing was tremendous, and they didn't use any words to do it.
Mm-mm.
The music sometimes didn't even make sense with what was going on.
Yep.
And then when Elliot's running from the police, it's almost like they're playing chase music the whole time. And, just the body language, the visual cues, just all these just...
This reminded me more of season one.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Like the intense tension that I would get in season one where things would happen and you're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen right now? What is going on? Oh, I want to go back and watch season one again. The only complaint that I have, and I have to say this, I have to get this out there, is I don't care if this makes me sound bad. I am starting to become a visual snob. Okay. I now have that really nice TV.
Yeah.
65-inch QLED. Okay.
Yeah.
And I have my Hulu app and my Netflix. They look fucking amazing. So when I go to watch something on the USA app and everything is grainy and pixelated, and because cable TV can't keep up with the quality of these other ones.
Right.
Like copper wire does not conduct it well enough.
Right.
We're living in a digital world and this is analog shit. So when I'm watching this, it almost makes my teeth hurt to try to justify the fact that I have this $2,000 TV and I'm watching something that's the same quality as the 1980s. It bugs me. And I know it sounds like a real first world problem, and it is. I get it. But Jesus, watching Into the Spider-Verse and watching the colors just jump out at me, and then switching over to this, and every time the sky is cloudy, boxes appearing on my screen because it's so goddamn low quality. Even though it says that it's a high def channel, it's not really transmitting. Right. It's 1080i,
when we first started coming out with these high def TVs, when they first started coming out with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the only show on television that was broadcasting in high def was The Tonight Show.
Yes.
It was that scenario. It's why would you buy this TV for this one show? Or it's when DVDs first came out.
Yep.
And I was slow. I was slow to switch to DVD.
Yes. A lot of people were.
Because Laserdisc, because I had VHS. What do I need to get DVD for? Do you know what inspired me to get DVD?
Godzilla?
Nope.
Lost in Space?
Nope.
Because for me, it was Lost in Space.
You Lost in Space, yes. Actually.
And I was so excited because, that was the first time that we had deleted scenes.
Yeah. No, the big thing for me was wrestling. WWE released wrestling DVD home video. I believe it was The Rock's DVD. It was the first one that came out on DVD. And it had extra features that the VHS didn't have.
So basically the same thing. It came down to the extra features.
It had extra interviews, extra matches, and other and extra stuff like that. That the DVD had more features, more footage than the DVD.
Yeah.
And then the VHS. And then for years after that, every time the DVDs came out and the VHS came out, before they phased out VHS, the DVDs always had more than the VHS. And that's why I switched. That's why I went to it. And then when they came out with Blu-ray and HD DVD, I waited to see who won that war before I went to Blu-ray.
I did too. Yep. That was a close war for a while.
I was at Big Lots Junk not too long ago. And they had an HD DVD on the rack that they were selling. It was $1. But I couldn't believe it. Wow. Yeah.
So.
Anyhow, that's it.
That's all I got.
Me too. We'll talk to you guys all next week. I'm on the Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm kind of on the Twitter. I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
I'm more on Twitter than Facebook or anything else nowadays, even Instagram.
I'm on Instagram more than anything, but it's because Twitter seems to be such a cesspool sometimes. But anyway.
I actually like the fact on Twitter that I block and mute so many people mm-hmm. and sponsors and ads and all kinds of shit that I don't care about seeing or whatever. I don't mind it.
Notice neither one of us cares about Facebook. If it wasn't for the Messenger, I don't think that I'd have a Facebook account. Or the few things like Spotify is tied to Facebook. So like whenever I go to log into Spotify, it's like, click here.
Well, someone I'm Facebook friends with the other day posted like, can I get rid of my personal Facebook page but keep my pages up? And it's like, no, you have to have a personal Facebook page to run pages.
Yep.
So I still like Facebook for like family stuff. That's primarily what I use it for. And wrestling news.
So. Yep.
All right. That's really it. See ya. Say something?
No.
I usually always say the last thing.
No. You were talking so much that I was just like, I zoned out completely.